Easter Sunday with John Cleary on ABC Local Radio.
Hi, thanks for joining us. And to mark this special Easter weekend, we're taking a look at what's going on at two of Australia's biggest Christian festivals, Easter Fest in Toowoomba and Res Fest in Melbourne. They brought to Australia some of the hottest names in contemporary Christian popular music, including a couple of Australian bands, Newsboys and Alabaster Box, who we heard from in our first hour. Coming up in this hour, a bit of a critical look at the whole phenomena of Christian festivals, what they're about, where they've come from, with somebody who is known to many who've associated themselves with churches in Australia over the years, the Reverend Dr. John Smith of God Squad, and known to many as a sort of crusading evangelist, but also somebody who's put a fair bit of study in doing a PhD in the United States on the whole origin of the Jesus movement, what colours much of contemporary evangelical Christianity. John Smith will be joining us in just a few moments' time. Following John, perhaps the biggest band in Christian music today, the American band visiting Australia at the moment, Jars of Clay. So that's coming up. A very busy hour for us. And following that, a regular feature, the quiz, some traditional music for Easter, and then we'll be joined by an old friend of Sunday nights, David Bush, who's taking us on an encounter with Africa.
Easter Sunday with John Cleary.
And now on Sunday night, somebody who's been on the gospel trail for a long time and knows the business of Christian festivals inside out, not as a manager, but as a guest. John Smith, well known to many Australians as the bikey evangelist, a year or so ago completed a doctorate at Asbury in the United States and joins us now. And John, we should say where you are speaking from. You were scheduled to speak at Easter Fest, but have found yourself waylaid by a bug and are in hospital in Warrnambool.
Yeah, I'm afraid the septicemia made it impossible for me to get out of hospital bed and be there, and I'm very frustrated because I was looking forward to it in that, as I understand it, Easter Fest has been, compared to many of the festivals I'm used to going to, fairly light on in terms of input. It's been basically just a music festival, but this year they're, I think, upping the ante a bit and having some seminars and things which I was very glad to be involved with and won't be, kind of thing.
John, this business of Christian festivals coming together, I mean, one could go back to the Middle Ages and talk about them, but there is a certain modern phenomenon about them, isn't there, that started about 30 years ago, that began essentially with music and have broadened, and there's a whole international circuit almost now. Can you just outline for us a few of these big international festivals?
Yes, well, part of my doctoral work was researching movements, mostly religious, but some secular ones too, during the counterculture period of the late 60s, early 70s. So it was an area that I had to research at a doctoral level. And the oldest one, as far as I can find out in Australia, is one actually in the small university town of Asbury itself, a thing called Ichthus. And it's significant that Ichthus began just 12 months after the Great Woodstock Festival. So really the thing that is different about most of the current festivals, not all but most of them, is that the initial festivals were far closer to their, I can't call them secular, because the hippies weren't actually irreligious. They were sort of a mishmash of all sorts of religious sentimentalities and ideas. But it was nearer to the distinctly non-Christian counterculture movement than they are now. They tend to be now, in my opinion, more of an enclave of more update choirs singing to the choir. Now, don't get me wrong when I said I'm not saying they're not good or aren't doing a good thing, but those first early festivals really were close to the youth movements that were definitely not going to church.
There's also a thing in which those festivals, like Woodstock and the great ones from the 60s, were actually an echo of revivalist evangelism, because the United States, particularly in the 1850s and 1860s, made much of the capacity for people to meet together in these great tent meeting campaigns,
yes,
where they'd gather. So there's a sense in which there has always been an interesting connection between sort of Christianity and the big mass gathering.
No question about that. And the interesting thing is that the one that I've had most to do with over the years is not in our own country, but one called Greenbelt, which is held in England, and it's gone from up and down in its attendance. At one stage, it got up to about 35,000 people. One unit's the biggest crowd I've ever spoken to, actually, in my own career. But it dropped right back and looked like it was going to collapse for a little while, and it's now back up, I think, over 20,000 again. And some of the more radical performers like Jim Wallace, a number of those who are seen as being more outspoken on a socio-political level about the gospel, including myself, have been regular speakers there. Tony Campolo. A lot of us have been going backwards and forwards every other year to it. But the significant thing is that it was actually launched on the basis of one of the Jesus freaks who up in the Midwest started a major movement and a major Jesus paper and a number of communes. And he actually ended up with kind of almost revivalist preaching teams. One of them particularly followed the Oregon Trail, historic old Oregon Trail, going all around that area of the west coast of America, preaching the gospel. And the guy that ran that went to England, and he met with a guy who was, I think, a university student at the time, and was somebody who, in following years, became a substantial contributor financially to Greenbelt. And he made at least the mythology, as far as I can gather it, was that he said to one of these guys, get yourself an open field and some guitars and you've got yourself a festival. Now, these guys were guys that were not making money like much of the present Christian music scene. They were not a commercial proposition. They were a proposition of joining with their secular counterparts in looking for, we even used to say in those days, Jesus freaks or ecology freaks. So they were far, far more radical than the current set. And in some ways, Greenbelt has managed to maintain that tradition of being in touch with the secular world as well.
So you have a large festival still continuing in England, a Greenbelt every year. In the United States, there are several of these festivals, are they not? Some of them are very, very strongly commercial in their focus. So yes. I recall festivals like Estes Park in the United States up in Colorado, which are really about the Christian music business.
Yeah, I would hardly list Estes Park. I have actually spoken at Estes Park, but it's the kind of place where you've got, I don't want to be crude, but sometimes sort of Christian nymphettes getting around looking like Christian sex symbols and little blokes running around with their checkbooks, signing up future possibly economically viable gospel singers. So I'm being a bit cynical when I say that. I'm probably overstating the case. But I don't see Estes Park as something that's inside of the traditional of the great Jesus festivals. It's more of a commercial thing to do with the whole Christian music scene, which, of course, country music in the States is next to gospel music. Now, gospel music next to country music is the biggest moneymaker in the United States, beyond rap or blues or any of those.
So those Christian music festivals like Estes Park are really industry festivals for the gospel music or the contemporary Christian music set just as a country music thing, is an industry thing for country music.
And then you've got festivals like Creation, which I think would be one of the biggest festivals in the States, and I would never get a cigar, so to speak, when it comes to that kind of one, because they're extremely fundamentalist.
Well, let's talk about that for a moment. So we put to one side the commercial festivals, then you go to the other music come cultural festivals, which are available for Christians to choose from in the United States, and you're suggesting that they have their own political colour to them.
Yes. Interestingly enough, the one that's associated with Jesus People in the USA, Japusa in Chicago, which actually was launched by the same guy as went to England and triggered off Greenbelt. They are far more conservative than many, but they are nevertheless opening the doors in their festivals to a great number of speakers on a wide range of subjects. And some people in Australia would know Res Band.
Yes, one of the most successful bands of the 80s.
Well, see, they are very radical. They're not into making money, and they would be on the side of a more conservative faith. But from what I know of the guys there, and I've been there a few times too, to Pooja, and know one or two of their... Glenn Kaiser is a very personal friend of mine, Glenn and Wendy. They would be looked on as fairly conservative theologically, but they are absolutely radical about commitment, and they aren't anywhere near the edge of that commercialisation of praise music and everything else that's going on now. They are so radical, they almost make C.T. Studd sound as though he was, second rate. They really are full on in their commitment. The difference between that and, say, Greenbelt is that Greenbelt do several risky things none of the festivals I've seen elsewhere have done. The first one is they've said, look, let's not just do something that reinforces the faith amongst our radical following. Let's do something to build bridges to reach out to the culture. So it both reaches out, and by the use of many of us who are a bit more at the radical edge of the faith, also helps young Christians actually think more holistically about the gospel in the real world.
There's a link I want to make here. Well, I was able to have a discussion with Jim Wallace of Sojourners in the United States in the last few days. He's got a new book out, which is called, ironically or not ironically, The Great Awakening, which of course harks back to the great progressive evangelicalism. He's suggesting that there is a tide among younger evangelical Christians that makes them aware of social issues, partly through last year's Wilberforce campaign and the environmental stuff, that is actually making them, moving them towards a wider, almost a more open, a generous, leftish view of the world, and that sea change is moving through the church. I want to suggest to you that in part has been through the agencies of festivals like Greenbelt and those others you mentioned, that this has been over the last 20 years a real change shifting, a chance for young people to catch up with wider things than just outside of their own church community.
Well, I think there's several aspects to this. I haven't really managed to get much traction with the academics on this one, but one of the chapters in my dissertation was called The Wandering Charismatics. And I have a theory that is easily missed. I mean, people who have written excellent stuff on the sociology of religion of late, like William Sims Bainbridge and the other guy that works with him, they have said that there are certain things that made the Christian church grow in the first few centuries, and one they've said is social networks. The second one is involvement in such thing as the plagues, in liberation of women, contrary to what might be sometimes thought by secularists today. Many of these things, but he more or less dismisses the significance of St. Paul as a key figure in the growth of Christianity. And my view is that Paul's itinerancy, his going all over the Roman Empire, and a number of other apostles doing likewise, was far more significant than is recognised. Now, to be honest, I guess I'm pushing my own craft because I've been an itinerant for much of my own ministering life. But I could speak for hours about the most extraordinary things that have resulted from one-off contacts. The thing about your itinerance over the centuries, whether it be Francis of Assisi, whether it be John Wesley, whether it be the early apostles, or whether it be a number of people like Jim Wallace and myself and others, we are itinerants. Those festivals would, again, just simply be nice gatherings of people enjoying themselves if it wasn't that incendiary voices were being heard at those particular places. And I mean, I think Ken Polo and myself and Jim, I think we are very thankful for those festivals because they give us a ready-made audience that we can drop, as it were, our incendiary thought bombs, and those people then scatter out with a transformed message. And I really believe that itinerant, wandering, charismatic model is one that now is lost. I mean, we started doing this back in Australia when there was really no interest in the church or in Christianity much at all on the secular front. And for about 20 years, we went all around the country with God Squad and with music and so on. And really now you can trace back all the huge movements currently in the Western world, even the mega churches themselves, you can trace back to what happened with the Jesus movement in the very end of the 60s and through the 70s particularly.
Let's talk for a moment, because we haven't got much time left and I don't want to keep you, about the current wave of festivals in Australia. We have these. There's two now at Easter time, the Australian Gospel Music Festival in Toowoomba, which has been going for a decade now, called Easterfest, because they want to shift the emphasis, as you suggest they should, away from just music and onto broader cultural issues where they have speakers. This year you've got ResFest in Melbourne, which initially is starting off with a music focus. As well, established for a number of years in Sydney, you have the Black Stump Festival taking place at a different time of the year. How do you describe each of those festivals in terms of the pattern you've laid out?
Well, Black Stump is far more open. I mean, Campola, myself, a lot of others have often been to Black Stump, and actually I was involved in the very earliest years of its development and also at the times when it almost collapsed. And I think it's a great festival. Tim Costello, for instance, has had a major platform there on issues of poverty, issues of justice and so on. So it's been a great place, like some of those overseas festivals. My fear about the current new move in this country is that when I look at who leads them, I know where they'll go. At the end of the day, whoever makes the decisions about leadership will really shape where the whole thing goes. And I want to be careful, but I don't want to be critical, but I fear the Victorian one could end up, if we're not careful, in being another one of those in-house Jesus music type festivals that doesn't have that sort of cutting edge.
Essentially a music promotion event.
Yeah, I'm not sure yet. I mean, we have to wait and see what happens, but I sense that. The other thing is that the beauty of some of the best of these festivals is that the charismatic, in terms of the more Pentecostal, has been embraced, but does not dominate. And therefore you can have a real social justice agenda, you can have a real environmentalist agenda without losing the gospel. And my fear is that we could end up with a network of festivals in this country that are very, very conservative in terms of what they promote. And of course, if they take up the space, then they'll be all the things that most of the kids that like going to festival ever hear. We've got to be careful we just don't sing to the choir.
Let's wind up. We've been able to talk to one of the bands who are coming out to Australia, and that's Jars of Clay, who we're about to hear from. Jars of Clay are one of those bands who have put out a message which isn't just locked into the church. You have a number of these bands that actually do see the problems that you're alluding to and are effectively working at it. So it's a thing about musicians as well as speakers, isn't it?
Yes, the thing I do notice, as I've watched for many years now, different ones developing, is that the old money, sex and power, trinity of evil, unfortunately often grabs successful Christian artists and groups. And a lot of them start with a real commitment to what matters, but you begin to get stories, and I'm not saying this of Jars of Clay, but there have been some groups that began off really willing to serve, but before long you hear you can't get them to perform under $1 million type of thing.
Yes, but you also have the other side too, where they'll start off with an appeal to both the secular and the religious market, but because most of their success comes from the religious market, they turn inwards themselves.
Yeah, or else they do what maybe Amy Grant and others have done, and that is they become secular artists because they can't survive. I mean
it's always a difficult path.
It is a difficult one. Barry Maguire's just been out here, you know, Eve of Destruction fame. Now, Barry's concerts out here were a kind of walk down memory lane from the hippie days. And some people went to hear them that had Christian background felt disappointed because he was one of the most, after he got converted to the Christian faith, he was one of the most lovable, fantastic Jesus freak musicians, you know, with a huge background from the days of the New Christian Minstrels and everything else. And this particular series he did were more, a little bit of spirituality in it, but it was looking at the old rock and roll music. But, I mean, Barry came and preached in our church, which is a tiny little inner city church with a lot of broken people, which is lovely. I mean, we gave him an offering, but he didn't ask for anything for that. But the fact was that he looked like going broke on this tour because your mega churches weren't interested in using him at all. Mm. And he was basically dumped by the major charismatic churches, from what I understood. So the guy had to go and do a more secular thing to be able to actually get the market to survive. So, you know, that's the other side of it. It's a tough call to be involved in the arts and not either become narrow-minded and to lose the real cutting edge out in the marketplace, or become so seduced by the power and wealth of the thing. And I mean, I've been running these festivals for years. I could tell horrendous stories of big names that are so morally loose in their own lifestyle because they've eventually got caught up in the racing around. They're being overstressed, so beginning to drink too much as Christians, ending up, you know, racing from one gig to another, losing their sense of connection to church, so that they never really go to any form of community of faith to centralise their lives, and they end up just beginning to fall apart. That's another danger. And the third one is, of course, that you simply end up with a comfortable lifestyle by singing to the choir. And it's great that there are people like Jars of Clay that have actually kept the cutting edge in their message and haven't been seduced. And I just pray there'll be a lot more of those kind of groups develop, and that we will develop festivals like Greenbelt that are willing to even be at risk to theologically debate issues and take risks in what we put on the platform, because young people don't want to be propagandized. They want to be stimulated to think through the faith in a way that's relevant to the secular culture around about them. And these festivals should be doing that.
John Smith, thanks for talking to us.
Thanks, mate.
We wish you well, John. Thanks. Get out of that bed soon.
Yeah, I hope so. God bless you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. John Smith on Sunday night on ABC Radio.